My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. John, how are you?
Oh, I'm delighted today, and what a beautiful day it is.
Certainly is. First day of baseball, at least for home games for the Washington Nationals, so a lot of people excited about that. But also a big week in politics, John. What we knew was probably coming at some point, happened a little bit earlier than a lot of people suspected, and that's that Rick Santorum suspending his campaign. Most people thought that he would stick it out through the April 24th Pennsylvania primary. In the end, due to diminishing funds, diminishing poll numbers, and certainly the health challenges of his youngest child, he decided to pull the plug now. The significance of that, and how surprised were you?
I was surprised that it came when it did, although talking to family friends, when one has a situation like that with a three-year-old child, that can be a tremendous burden on the family, and I do believe that was a big factor in his decision. In addition, Senator Santorum was faced with losing his home state of Pennsylvania's primary April 24th, which would have been very embarrassing for him and perhaps damaged his future political capital. We don't need to rehash the reasons that he was running behind in his home state, but they were significant. And when I was with him at the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference last month, this was widely discussed. Now, in talking to people, both friends and not-so-friends of Senator Santorum, they did say by getting out when he did, he preserves his option to do something in the future, run for office again, or perhaps serve in a future Republican administration. Former Congressman Phil English of Pennsylvania may have put it best. I'm not going to be so presumptuous as to say what Mr. Santorum will do in a Republican administration, but by getting out, he raises the odds that there will be a future Republican administration.
John, despite the best rhetorical efforts of Newt Gingrich, it seems like the party has pretty much come to the conclusion that this is Mitt Romney's nomination. Do you get the sense, though, that the conservatives in the party are more than willing to coalesce around him, or they'll have to be dragged kicking and screaming for the next couple months?
I tend to doubt that they're going to have to be dragged kicking and screaming, although, again, a lot of people are not yet focused on the presidential race per se. We've not even had the national conventions, and people are focusing on other things, such as the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman trial that's coming up. I will say that the chances are very strong Mitt Romney will pick a younger, more conservative running mate. And remember something. Once he is nominated, it will be him versus the prospect of Barack Obama being president for four more years. And I think anyone who had doubts about the Republican nominee will be cured of that once they start looking at that possibility. This is a different election from last time. In the sense, no one believes, at least on the right, that they can live with four more years of this president.
John, let's talk about some other political developments this week. The president of the United States pushing the Buffett rule, Mitt Romney trying to turn around the war on women against the president by saying most of the folks who have lost their jobs in this administration have been women, 92% actually. Mm-hmm. The president, of course, invoking President Reagan to call for the rich to pay in higher taxes. Republicans not liking that too much, saying it's a distortion of what Reagan did. But in the end, who made the stronger case on their respective issue?
Well, I have to say that I've been through everything in the debate about the Buffett rule and fairness and paying their fair share before. I am surprised and disappointed in Barack Obama for bringing up the Reagan quotes, because he is bringing up quotes that Reagan made about TEFRA, which was to close some of the loopholes in the 1981 tax cut that Congress passed a year later in return for a promise to get more spending cuts from the Democratic Congress. Reagan went along with closing the loopholes and causing some taxes to go up. He never saw a single one of the tax or the spending cuts that he was promised, and he regretted it very much. These are things he wrote about. He turned to his chief of staff at the time, James Baker, and said, "Don't ever talk to me about something like this again," or roughly those words, meaning raise taxes, and he never went anywhere near there the rest of his term. And it's very unfair to take words that he said that he later publicly regretted. Regarding the war on women, there's another factor, too. Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rodgers, the highest-ranked Republican woman in the House GOP hierarchy, points out that of all the new businesses that were started last year, two-thirds were started by women in their homes using a computer and running their own businesses, basically. This is an administration that wants greater regulation, greater taxes, and a harder line on business. The National Federation of Independent Businessmen says the Obama administration is no friend of small business. If that's the case, it's no friend of the woman entrepreneurs that are out there. So says Congresswoman Rodgers. I might add also, Tamara Mellon, who tried to save the Jimmy Choo shoe company from a hostile takeover, tried to turn to private equity companies for help, and she remarked in the end that she could get no help, and she said, there's next to no women I know in the private equity field. Maybe that would be a little different if this administration would ease up on business.
John, last topic, certainly a profound loss in our work field, and that's journalism. Mike Wallace, the longtime 60 Minutes newsman, and certainly with CBS even longer than that, passing away over the weekend at the age of 93. And you've got an interesting feature in Human Events about the job that he almost had about 40-some years ago.
It's fascinating, and I'm sorry this is only touched in a cursory way in all of the obituaries. As a political reporter for CBS in 1967, he was covering the former Vice President Richard Nixon as he prepared to launch his political comeback. The two got to know each other quite well. They liked each other, spent time alone on an airplane once. And in February of the following year, as Nixon was prepared to win the New Hampshire primary, he, through intermediaries, offered the job of press secretary for the campaign to Mike Wallace. Wallace thought about it very seriously. He liked Nixon, thought he was savvy and hardworking, but in the end, he just decided not to do it. And sure enough, that was the same year he went on with a new program entitled 60 Minutes. Well, more than 40 years and 800 interviews later, that's what he's most identified with in the public eye. However, one has to think, as the person who would have been the first product of electronic journalism to be behind the White House podium, would Mike Wallace's press secretary brought television cameras and live coverage in the press room at the White House more than a generation before they actually came? Would he have improved Nixon's relationship through his own friendship with other reporters? And how would he have done jousting with some of the premier duelists in that press room, notably my former colleague, Helen Thomas? It's a fascinating what might have been to consider.
Yeah, certainly would have changed history for him and for the Nixon administration. John, fascinating to think about. Very good. Thank you very much for being with us, as always.
Oh, thank you for having me, Greg. And our hearts and thoughts go out to Mike Wallace's son, Chris Wallace of Fox News, who's carried on his father's tradition of no-holds-barred interviews, that's for sure.
Yeah, he certainly has. John Gizzi is political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.